Hi, Sue Hall and Tristan McDonald are welcoming you to yet another podcast in the Walk and Talk the Dis Out of Dyslexia series hosted by the Whole Dyslexic Society. We are lucky to have Tessa Halliwell with us today. Tessa and I have been friends for over 30 years and she joins us from the UK. Her first degree was in psychology, I believe. She's a Davis facilitator and also a Davis autism coach. And today she's going to be shedding light on the mysteries of trigger words. Okay, Tessa, please would you like to add to your introduction and welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm really excited with what you're doing. So yeah, very pleased to be here.
It's fun. So you've been a facilitator for some time, right? And you've obviously had wonderful people going through your programs. And just to sort of set the stage for the trigger word idea, when we do our programs, our students have their tools and they've got the mysteries out of the alphabet and they know the reading exercises. But the little words that don't have picture meanings, some people know them as sight words and some people know them as the Dolch list. Basically, they cause a problem for us because they don't have images for the meaning. And so our students have to master those trigger words. And our definition of mastery is when something becomes part of us. And for that to happen, we have to have a 3D image for the meaning of the word, we have to have the spelling of the word, and we have to have the pronunciation. And once we put all of those things together, then that word does become part of us. And we can think with it and we can read it, and it does not cause any disorientation. Tristan is in the process of doing that post his program. So what intrigued you about trigger words? What led you into your latest venture?
Well, the trigger words, because they are that cause for confusion and they really are the things that actually cause dyslexia, really. What I discovered when I was working with my clients is very often what we look at is just the main or the most common definition for these little words that are causing them confusion. But if you actually look in the dictionary, some of these words have got a lot of definitions, and each of those definitions for a dyslexic needs to have a picture of the meaning of that definition. And there didn't seem to be any form of dictionary out there that actually supported that idea.
Mm-hmm. You're right. When we ask our students to master those trigger words, I mean, we tend to say just pick the most common one that you use. But I know Ron Davis has mastered every single definition, hasn't he, for every single trigger word?
Yes, I think he has. And it is important because you can still crop up against confusions with those. Little example, the word on has multiple meanings and they're slightly different. The general meaning of it is to be in contact with, and we can think, yeah, that's fine. You know, the cat is on the mat. The badge is on the coat, but it can also mean working.
Yeah.
It can also mean interacting with the thing used.
It's interesting. I've always just said to them, do the held up by one. If your mug is on the table, the mug is held up by the table. And sometimes we do the attached one as well, but I hadn't even thought of those other ones, to be honest.
Well, the interesting thing happens, doesn't it, when you think about the phone can be on the elephant, but if you turn that around and say the elephant is on the phone.
That's a pretty crushed phone.
That's amazing.
Can lead to a completely different picture, can't it?
Totally. Yeah. Oh, I love it. Tessa, that's cool. I hadn't even thought of that. So why are trigger words not a problem for people who don't have dyslexia?
That's a really good question.
Do they not need to know what these words mean?
I think they do, but I think part of it why they don't end up being confused in the same way is on the whole, they have a higher level of tolerance for confusion. And so they are able to kind of hold on perhaps to the end of the sentence and to be able to make a more accurate guess of what is actually going on, so they don't actually create an alternative meaning for the sentence. And also because of the way they've been taught to read, they find that the quickest route to understanding or getting meaning is to make a sound to meaning link. Whereas a dyslexic very much wants to use the visual symbol to go straight to a meaning, and to be asked to go visual meaning of the word to sound, and then from sound to picture, takes too long. Which is why a young dyslexic child will very easily be able to read dinosaur and will not very often be asked to decode or phonetically break down that very long word, because from the teacher's point of view, it's not necessary, because that child can read that word dinosaur. Mm-hmm. But these little words which don't have an obvious meaning, even though in conversation the dyslexic might be able to understand the meaning of was or saw, or because when being taught to read, they're being asked to phonetically slow down and break it down, and then asked to go from visual symbol to sound, then to meaning, they get lost in that route. Much quicker to go visual symbol straight to visual meaning.
So this is interesting. I hadn't even thought of that. So they have the visual symbol. They are being asked to make it into a sound. Sorry, the visual symbol being the printed word, right? So they have the printed word as a visual. They're being asked to put it into a sound. And then they go back automatically to what their visual image is. That would be like the normal process. But occasionally, obviously, for these little words, there's no visual image, right? So they get lost in space.
Yeah.
But that's so interesting, because I still don't understand. Do you think in sound most of the time, or do you think in images? Do you know?
I think in a mixture. For me, I actually use sound to slow down my thoughts.
I can understand that. I think I have to do that in order to actually picture an image for a word. I think very quickly, and sometimes I get way too ahead of myself.
Almost the pictures are too fast. And then if you know that you need to have to articulate, you know, talk about what it is you're thinking, you do actually have to slow them down, and words help to identify or anchor those pictures.
That's a good point, because we haven't talked about the fact that we sometimes have to slow down to be able to grasp what we're really reading. Because you're right, sometimes the pictures just happen that fast and we're just fine, there's no problem. And sometimes when we're really not understanding, we do have to slow it down and I guess almost sort of repeat it in our heads. But this is very interesting. I feel we're going down a rabbit hole. We need to interview somebody who actually only thinks with sound, because I'm really curious to know what happens when they meet these little words like the and if.
The whole of the development of language, if you think about why we actually talk, because we spoke to each other, our language, our oral language developed way before any kind of written form of mm-hmm. language. Mm-hmm. And the sounds still have to represent something. It's just that it was the whole sound that became a symbol. So dinosaur was whole. Cat was whole, it was never k-a-ta to identify. Mm. And dyslexics, everybody were just fine with that. Also because the spoken language is accompanied by gesture and non-verbal communication and also tone. And even without articulating whole words, a lot of meaning can be portrayed in that way. So through repeated experience, anyone, you experience the same when you go to a foreign country, anyone can gradually pick up the meaning of what is going on. Even the meaning of these little so-called sight words, because they do represent things that are happening in the real world.
Yes.
We just have to learn what that particular sound relates to.
Are there any languages without trigger words?
That's a really interesting question. I'm not sure that there are, simply because most of our trigger words in the English language are these prepositions and conjunctions. But I really am not certain about that.
That would be an interesting one to try and find out. I was just thinking, I'm a huge fan of Latin. I know that sounds really weird and old-fashioned, but we did it at school, and I sort of loved it because it's so solid and it's so logical. And those little words are sort of in the main words, aren't they? The word changes according to who's speaking and according to the tense. The endings, they're all so different. So in a way, why didn't we stick to Latin?
I know that some have been deliberately invented to try and follow more logical rules or have words that match their phonetic sound.
It just all comes back to that disorientation, doesn't it? If you hit a word, whether it's a big word or a little word, if it doesn't have an image for the meaning, we're going to disorient and then we're in trouble.
Yeah. If your preferred way of processing is to think in pictures, absolutely. If it's not, then it won't worry you so much. The big problem comes with the written symbol, the words, the letters. Right. That's where the real issue comes, because ordinarily we are experiencing the world three-dimensionally and through our vision.
Right.
And so looking at that, we want to make sense of what on earth are those two-dimensional letters.
Right.
And that arrangement and all the rest of it, then it means a sound. Well, how does it mean a sound? And it's the way that it's taught, the fact that it is slowed down and broken and all the rest of it.
Right.
And they only concentrate on that link between the visual symbol and the sound symbol.
Yes.
They forget entirely about what it means.
Yes. And going back to where you were a little while ago, it's interesting that we all use these little words correctly. Even though we have no idea what the visual image of the word that is, we actually use it correctly. We do distinguish between the and a. I mean, a is meaning one and the is one particular one. And I don't know how we do it, but whenever we use those words, we actually do use them correctly, which I find fascinating.
Do you think it's just because we're told that's what it means and then that's that?
We're not told what it means, though, are we?
It becomes a pattern that we get used to, and sometimes the pen and a pen, how it's used in the rest of the sentence, the whole meaning of that sentence, it just becomes a pattern. Go and help yourself to a biscuit.
And just for our Canadian viewers, or listeners rather, we should distinguish that biscuit you may have a different picture for than the one that Tessa had when she used it.
Yeah.
Because we would be thinking biscuit as in scone they have over here, but biscuit for you, you're picturing cooking. So that's interesting too, right? I find it fascinating. I really do. So, Tessa, you saw this problem. You saw a need for a dictionary that was going to have many image-based meanings for all these words. What did you do about it?
Well, the story is quite interesting because a group of Davis facilitators were having a meeting in an organic farm and a conference centre that's actually owned by a member of the Kindersley family, as in Dorling Kindersley.
The dictionary people.
Yeah, the very friendly visual dictionary people. They do visual dictionaries of easy-to-picture words, not the not-so-easy-to-picture words. And it just seemed kind of obvious to try and create a visual dictionary, but just those words which don't have easy-to-picture meanings.
Brilliant. So what did you have to do first of all? You had to go through all of them and come up with a visual yourself, right?
Yes.
Yes. That was a lot, right? Because we know there are 217 on our list. Did you go with all of those?
Didn't go with all of them for a number of reasons. We decided that we wanted to concentrate on those trigger words that the primary age children really had to be able to master, be able to read. So that was one thing that limited it. And the other thing is that some of the verbs also cause triggers for various reasons. And we thought we would leave that to a second app, which is going to be in the process of being done as well.
Nice.
But we want to see how this one goes.
That is very cool. So you went through all the trigger words, you made these little sketches yourself, I'm guessing, and you found somebody to do the drawings.
That was one of the trickier things to do. Went through three different artists and eventually found Liz Ananelli, who was creator of the Moomin books that were around a few years ago now. But yeah, she's a wonderful artist because really needed someone to be able to portray in their drawings the meaning, because that's how we would experience them in real life when somebody was having a conversation or you were observing somebody mm-hmm. Describing what they were doing.
And what did you find was the most difficult part about portraying those meanings in two-dimensional drawings? Do you find that difficult? Did you make them in clay before you...
No, didn't make them in clay. And the beauty of that was is simply because Liz's drawings were just so lifelike that it wasn't necessary. But the difficulty is always to get the subtlety between the different meanings mm-hmm. of a particular word.
Mm-hmm. No, I absolutely get that. And Tristan, you're doing your trigger words at the moment, and obviously you're doing them pretty much on your own. And our instructions to people who are doing these models is you have to have the essence of the meaning in the model, because if you take the words from the dictionary and you put them into a 3D model, then you should be able to look at the 3D model and get the words back out again. But capturing that essence is not always the easiest part.
Well, the image has to work for you, and mm-hmm. it has to be your own personal image, but it also has to work for the definition. That's the tricky one. But once you make it a bit more personal, it sticks because it's your definition of it. And it's so long as it works, and so long as it makes sense, it works every time. That's the beauty about it, because it doesn't become, oh, I just have to sound out the word to make dinosaur. No, I get to build the dinosaur. I mean, anybody at any age should do this, because it sticks in your head. You remember, I built it and I can spell it without having to sound it out.
Isn't it that we all remember 80% of what we do? There's one of those charts that says we remember 20% of what we see or hear, and then 40% of what we see and hear, that type of thing. But I think it's something like 80 or 90% of what we actually do.
I absolutely agree with what Tristan's just said. And this app, although we designed it with a view to helping dyslexics and helping students who are learning English as a foreign language and teachers who are helping children learn to read, in no way is it meant to replace what a dyslexic really needs to do, which is to create that model that represents the picture that they want to have of the meaning of that particular word.
Well, it's mixing the two sound-based and the image-based ways together. If you were to have it an app or a dictionary that had both an image and how to sound out the word and how it's spelled, it's the best of both worlds. It'd be great if everybody could adopt this way of spelling out a word.
I think the beauty of having a dictionary like this is, first of all, it tells the sound thinkers that there is a problem. Because if the sound thinkers don't know there's a problem because we don't have images for these words, they're not likely to do anything about them. And they might look at those images and think, gosh, I didn't know that. Because very often when I'm doing Pro Ds and I say about these little words and nobody has an image for the, and I keep sort of rattling on, and sometimes there'll be a teacher who puts her hand up and says, but what does the mean? And I said, well, exactly, what does that mean? And another teacher will say, well, the chair, the sofa, the sideboard. And I say, well, I know what chair and sofa and sideboard mean, but what does that mean? And so I honestly think it's an area which is totally new to many people, the fact that this is even a problem for us, and that obviously it has never been a problem for them. But when it's illuminated, they sort of think, well, gosh, I didn't know that.
There's actually four different pictures for the.
Well done. There you go. See, now I'm being illuminated. Oh, dear. And also, you're right, because it's a help. It's an assistance for anybody who is doing this follow-up with our kids. We ask the parents to help the kids swap sentences, get an idea of what you want to model. But sometimes the parents are just as stuck as the kids. And very often one of the parents is dyslexic anyway. And I think that I would say to them, if they know that the next word they're going to do is on, for example, then have a little look at this app, get a really good idea of what the child needs to put in the model, and then you can help them so much better.
And it's also a quick way as well, because often another problem that dyslexics have is with homophones. So being able to easily have a picture that distinguishes between there and there, two and two, mm-hmm. four and four, by and by.
Absolutely.
We could go on.
That's such an important thing to touch on, though, because if a dyslexic child can't understand that and the parent doesn't understand why, or their child doesn't know that, and they don't know who he thinks, if we introduce this as a, it helps the parent and the teacher go, okay, I know how my son or my daughter thinks, now let me address it better, rather than just keep repeating the same sound-based way every single time.
Yeah.
How long did this whole process take you?
Oh, a long time. See, it was quite exciting when we started off. We thought we were going to be at the forefront of app making. So we are talking about sort of 7 years or more.
Whoa.
Took a long time to sketch out all the pictures, took a long time for Liz to be able to draw them, took a long time because the app design changed. It started off more as a dictionary and then it's moved towards incorporating grammar as well and parts of speech.
So Tessa, this wonderful app, you did mention in the beginning that it was sort of going to be a dictionary. Did you expect it to be a paper dictionary to begin with and then it morphed into an app? Or?
Yeah, well, as I say, we kind of started this so long ago, or at least the idea occurred to us so long ago that originally we thought, yes, we'll do a little paper book dictionary physical thing. But it was obvious that the internet and apps were going to be the future. And so it was inevitable, really. We had to try and redesign it and think about how we could make it into some mm-hmm. sort of digital format.
So how is it available? What is it called? Where is it available?
So at the moment, it's available on iPad. Mm-hmm. So it's downloadable from the iTunes store. It's called Picture Grammar because part of the additional feature, other than having these multiple definitions and visual images for trigger words, we've also looked at how those trigger words are used and they fall into certain parts of speech. So they're very often the prepositions or the conjunctions, pronouns, personal pronouns, subject pronouns, object, demonstrative pronouns. So we added a feature that looks at parts of speech. All eight parts of speech, visual format.
Brilliant. That sounds wonderful. Do you have any plans to make it paper ever? I'm so old-fashioned.
No, it's going to go to Android phones in a couple of weeks, and eventually it will be available on iPhone as well. We're just rolling this out in stages. But the real joy of this app is that profits will go to a fund that we've set up to give bursaries to people who want to do a Davis program. The Gifts for Dyslexia Fund.
That's just fantastic. Well done. This is going to be available worldwide, obviously, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I do see a lot of the kids that I work with, they are using their phones so much, obviously, I mean, for personal use, but also when we're doing our reading exercises, you know that if we come to a word we don't know, we spell it to someone and they tell us what the word is. Well, sometimes the kids have an app in their phone and they can just spell the word to the phone and it'll tell them what the word is. So they can be very independent. Yeah. I mean, if you and I were reading together and you came across a word you didn't know, you would stop and spell it to me, wouldn't you? And I'd tell you what it is. So it's only the phone telling them what it is. It's not going to tell them the meaning,
right?
But just to identify the word. So what I'm getting at is the kids are very confident these days with that sort of thing.
The thing about the app is because it's not a whole dictionary, so it's not thousands and hundreds of thousands of words, it is very specific. There are very few words. So when a dyslexic's looking up a word, it'll be pretty easy for them to be able to match the word that they triggered on in the book or whatever to whatever they're seeing on the app.
Yeah, so you're tying it into that disorientation as well. So when they're reading and they suddenly trigger on the word for, F-O-R, right? They'll know they've triggered. They can look it up in the app and then it'll give them an image. And I'm guessing, having looked at that image, do you think they still sometimes need to master it in clay? Do you think it would be useful? Or do you think sometimes that's enough?
Again, that's another really difficult question because everyone is different. As you know, that sometimes if you can create in your own head from the definition a visual scene, picture that kind of works for you, then that's all you need to do. It's only when you continue to read and it's still causing a disorientation, you think, oh, hang on a minute, I need to alter that picture, or actually I do need to do it in the clay to be certain.
I understand what you're saying because I remember that when I was mastering my trigger words, I made a model for the word each, and each computer had a keyboard, and I left it on the table and I walked away from it and I thought, well, why isn't that every? Every computer has a keyboard. And I thought, oh, well, it's each. And I've tried to walk away from it. And it just kept bugging me because I thought if there's a different word, there's got to be a slightly different meaning. And you could have used either. Each computer has a keyboard. Every computer has a keyboard. But until I realized that, you know, one is being talked of individually and one is being talked of as a group, then my brain settled down. But it wasn't until I really understood the difference. Sometimes we just have to make these things.
Me personally, I think the app is going to be brilliant, but I also just like the idea of play. I like the idea of being able to sit down and making it my own. I think that'd be good for a lot of very young students learning how to define.
I like the idea because it's a little bit like if you looked at a dictionary which just had the words, you would think, gosh, I haven't got a clue what to make, right? To me, then I could look at the app and then I could think to myself, oh, that's where this is going. Or I use it that way, or I use it that way. Does that make sense? And then you can make your model if it's what you need to do. But sometimes it might be, oh, I get it. That's easy. It's fantastic. I love the fact that it's illuminating a big gap in the teaching that we receive.
Yes, hopefully. And hopefully it will give teachers a resource too. And for me, it was actually something that hit me over the head with a hammer. As I tried to do this, I suddenly thought, I actually don't know. I thought I knew, thought I had it sus. I never had a problem reading Shakespeare, but actually, I don't really have a clear picture for the difference between these definitions. So it was fun for me. I actually really enjoyed doing it because it is wonderful to be able to have that. And it enriched my reading afterwards because I could really understand how an author was actually using these words. It just enriched the whole reading experience for me.
What authors would think of this app and this method of thinking, what would they think of how dyslexics think? I know I'm deviating off the topic.
We'll have to find one.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are many authors who are actually dyslexic. J.K. Rowling, Jackie Wilson would admit that she was dyslexic. A lot of writers, A.A. Gill, who wrote for the Sunday Times, was very dyslexic by admission, had to rely on a lot of spell correction and computer aids.
What I've found, I mean, Tessa, you've done all your trigger words. I've done the simple list. I didn't know what I didn't have until I had it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know the level of confidence that I was going to get because I had filled in all these blanks. And now it's very, very easy to recognize when I'm not confident. And I can read a sentence and I can think to myself, well, really, I don't get that. I know that there's a different level of confidence that I need to get to be able to get it. Am I making any sense? Like I said, you don't know what you've got until you've got it. And I think that's really important. And I think that's why our kids get so much more confident. They actually end up possibly with a greater understanding than some of the kids who have a typical way of learning.
Yes, I think so. With anything, the more you know, the more you understand, the more you're certain. And when you have certainty, then you can be confident.
It's a nice feeling. I absolutely agree. The next series is going to be the verbs.
Yeah, we're going to look at all those verbs because part of the problem with verbs is how they relate to time and mood and whoever it is that's doing the talking. And unless you have clear pictures for all of that, it can be problematic.
That's why I encourage my kids to do the pronouns before they do the verbs and to master the word time before they can do them as well. Because you're absolutely right, it depends on who's talking and it depends on the tense. And, you know, one of the most simple words that a child is asked to read is the word is. Well, the verb to be basically means to exist, as far as I remember. And how on earth do you make a model for the word is without knowing that we're talking about he, she, or it that's doing the talking and without knowing that it's in the present? And yet that word is on every kindergarten spelling list. I'm always amazed that those lists that they give you for the words that a child is meant to recognize at a certain grade or certain level, they're always tiny words because there must be some thought process out there that says if it's small, it's going to be recognizable. But if and in and on and is and we, they're some of the hardest words to master. And yet they're on a list for a kindergarten grade one child.
Yeah, but they are all the words that are required if you're actually going to make a sentence. You can't just have a sentence with nouns in.
It's true. It is. It's true. And we all use them all the time. Kristen, how are you doing with all of this?
It's a lot of information. When you guys were talking about is, I was trying to just develop an image in my head, and I'm thinking, that's a weird one.
To make a model for somebody existing is not the easiest thing in the world, is it? But Tessa, it's fantastic for you to join us. I'm so excited that you've been able to do that. And I'm thinking maybe next time you might be willing to share a little bit of knowledge about your autism program.
Oh, I'd love to talk about the autism. Absolutely.
Because when we're talking Debra's autism coaching, we're talking even more concepts. We're not talking these little words, but we're still talking words that don't have easy images, and they're part of our development, and it's really taking us into a lot of understanding.
Yes, Ron Davis is just a genius to have been able to identify these concept ideas that allow an individual to make sense of themselves and of the world around them.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much. Maybe I'll just say until next time. I'm very, very grateful to you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that was truly a masterclass on mastering trigger words. Thank you, Tessa. Trigger words, those little words like the and if and, they make up half of what we read no matter what grade level we are. So when you add in concepts which also have no picture-based meaning, I would like to suggest that at least 2/3 of the text that we read have no image-based meaning behind them, which obviously makes it difficult for people who have this way of thinking. Tessa's app is called Picture Grammar. At the moment, it's available on Android, iPad via iTunes, and soon it will be available on iPhone. If you have questions for her, please do send them to info@thewds.org, and we will make sure that Tessa gets them. The next podcast, we're going to be meeting one of Tristan's friends, and I look forward to joining us.